all the work and all the striving can never really give us that true sense of value. So when I think of value, I think of how hard we try to feel or become valuable. And the irony, of course, is we inherently are. Most of us don't need to find it or to strive for it or to prove it, but to accept it.
You're listening to the Woman of Value podcast. You are about to hear the story of a woman who is following her dreams and passions and creating positive change in the world.
Dawn Culler was an entrepreneur in the computer industry when she was abruptly summoned to take a life-changing course. What followed was an extraordinary journey that gave her profound insights and a deep understanding of the human dynamic. Combining these insights and her business experience, she wrote a memoir, Messages, that came out in 2022. She's a sought-after executive coach, and her clients have included many of the most influential women in entertainment, as well as senior leaders at such companies as Sony Pictures, NBC Universal, Lionsgate, DreamWorks, Fox, Snapchat, Disney, and Amazon. Welcome to the show, Dawn.
Well, thank you, Sandy. I very much appreciate being here today. Love your podcast and your work.
Thank you. Well, I'm impressed by your bio, your resume, and all the people that you've worked with and the incredible companies and the leadership roles that you've taken. But as we all know, we don't always start that way. And so this podcast is really about how we step into our value. How do we become the people we are? And so the first question I always ask is, what does woman of value mean to you?
What I think of when you say that is immediately, we are all women of value. But in my experience, what I found is that with myself and working with other women, most of us have a perceived sense of inadequacy or unworthiness. So we work very hard to prove in some ways we are worthy. We're striving beyond what is healthy at work or, you know, to be a perfect wife, mother, or daughter. And all the work and all the striving can never really give us that true sense of value. So when I think of value, I think of how hard we try to feel or become valuable. And the irony, of course, is we inherently are. Most of us don't need to find it or to strive for it or to prove it, but to accept it.
Yeah, well, I love that. We are inherently valuable, and it's almost like we have to remove all the blocks that got in the way of recognizing and stopping that striving, pushing so hard to prove, right? Yes. I mean, so I'm sure you have a message and a story in your own life where this probably was true, I'm imagining. Can you share some of your own experiences in that regard?
I was very much striving to prove myself worthy. Most of that came from, you know, trauma in my childhood, abuse in my childhood, which I had long blocked out, but I was steadfast in trying to prove myself of value. I put myself through college selling real estate. And I remember thinking, God, I'm only as good as my last sale. And I remember thinking what a horrible feeling that is, that I was always going to be on this wheel if I couldn't, you know, if I couldn't get out of real estate and do something else. So I graduated and started a computer company because I thought if I started a computer company, it would be more stable. And thus so would my sense of value. And built that company through the state of California from 24 to 34. At that point, I was just really hit with that life-altering course because the ways that I tried to prove myself value, they didn't pan out. And finally, it all caught up to me.
Tell us how it didn't pan out, what happened, and how it caught up.
Well, it was interesting in that I was your typical hyperachiever. And got the company, started to get some major accolades, was on the cover of the Los Angeles Times business section because we were such a fast growth tech company. And I remember when the paper came out and, you know, it was a great high and you felt like of value for about 3 days. But it was, so it can be obtained, but it couldn't have been sustained because shortly after it was like, oh, what do I need to do next to feel of value? And anyway, I was very much on that trajectory, not semi-aware that I was striving for value, but not aware of why I wasn't. And then one day I drove into work, I pulled up to the building, and I couldn't get out of the car. I literally couldn't move the handle to get out. My body wouldn't let me. And I wanted to go. I wanted to get in the building. I wanted to pick up the reports. I wanted to do what I did every day. It was, you know, I was the CEO of this company. I wanted to run it. And I couldn't move. And I fought with myself. I was pounding on the steering wheel. I was like, I want to go to work. And then inside of me, it's like, yeah, but you can't move. Finally, after about 20 minutes, after I exhausted myself, a message came into my head. It was an inaudible message, very loud and clear. And it said, this is no longer your way. And really, the only choice I had at that point was to turn around and go home. So I went home. I sunk into a depression. And within about a week or two, I started to get this inaudible voice again with the next steps. Those next steps led me to meet a therapist and started to work through the process of what was happening. I knew at the time it was certainly more than just my own healing. I knew from the time that these inaudible voices came that it was like, okay, there's something going on here. I felt very much that I was being called to do something.
So your intuition is extremely tuned in.
Very tuned in. And I think, you know, we all get messages. It's just, there's a time in our lives where we can't keep going down the path that we were because it's not the authentic or natural path for us in our lives. I broke down enough, I think, to hear that the soul's voice of saying, this is no longer your way. We've got other plans for you.
This hyperachiever, which I'm sure so many of our listeners can relate to, just going, and not just women. I mean, I think our society, especially United States, is so geared to achieve, and make that the most important part of your life. And what people don't realize is they forgot to take care of the most important parts of their lives, which are mental health, relationships, connection, all of the things that really matter. And we often neglect those things in the process of achievement. And there's this kind of rat race where we're never happy because we always wonder what's next. And you talk about that in your message here, like, I can't sustain this level of worth because what's the next thing that I need to achieve? And so that is really hard to sustain. But the good thing is you figured that out when you were pretty young and you were able to really get the message that you needed to heal and you needed to find what you were really being called to. So tell us, what was that thing you were called to?
It very much took me through my own healing. And it was through, you know, the abuse, which I had blocked out, which creates a type of soul blindness. It's almost impossible to see who you really are when you've come from people that have treated you or neglected you, particularly parents, in such a way that your survival mode is, I'm bad, I'm wrong, I'm unworthy, I deserve this, they're good, they're benevolent, and that's how you grow because that's how you survive. And then you have to hit a point, or I certainly did hit the point where that just broke down. Part of the process was just recognizing what had happened, how I made sense of it. To your earlier point, kind of letting go of all the things I thought I was that I wasn't, like shame and guilt and all of those characteristics that you take on as you. And those feelings were not me. Those beliefs were not me. But you go through a point, and certainly I did, where you lose all sense of identity. Because everything you thought you were is not who you are. And that loss of identity helps you get back to root self. And when I got back to root self, I was a writer. I was not a tech person, although I had played that role. I was not a real estate agent. I was a writer. And part of the messages during this time of healing was write the book. So I started to write. At first, I had no idea what I was writing about. And then as this journey unfolded and it was so orchestrated by an intelligence beyond my own, it took me until I was 3/4 of the way through it until I recognized, oh, I'm supposed to write the story I'm living. And once I started to write the story I was living, it all became very clear that I'm being pulled in this direction, not only to share my experiences and how I came to trust them, but to also share a greater message that to me felt more universal than just something that I was given for myself.
Yeah. Often when we share our stories, people find themselves. And it's, I mean, even in you telling the point of crisis, I can relate to so much of what you're saying. And I obviously didn't grow up in the same environment as you, but just yesterday I was talking to my sister about trauma and how we hold it in our bodies. And it's not always the big T trauma. It's a lot of times that little T trauma where you move a lot or your parents were just too busy to pay attention to you, or you had a sick sibling or a parent with mental illness, which we had. And my sister said she used to come home from high school because she was going to school in another city. And she would tell my mother what was going on for the week. And my mother didn't really pay attention. Mm-hmm. And she said, I just internalized this message that I was talking too much or my story wasn't that interesting. Mm. And it wasn't, I didn't do that. It was interesting how we all grow up in the same family and come away with different experiences. But she had a recent experience that really she internalized again. Something was wrong with me. And I said, you see how you're still carrying that trauma. Mm-hmm. And what if it wasn't your fault? What if you were doing the best you could? What if it was somebody else didn't do their part? What if somebody else wasn't responsible? And I think we don't often see that because we grow up with this message that if parents are emotionally unavailable or emotionally immature or abusive in any way, children internalize. It's just pretty much the only way we can be wired, because you can't possibly believe that the people who are supposed to keep you safe, that there's something wrong with them.
I believe we all have some sense of trauma because it even goes before childhood itself. Joseph Campbell did a lot of great work on the story of myth, and he went all around the world and studied myths in every culture that had religious backgrounds or not. And everybody in every society had some story of being cast out, because in essence, we've all been cast out of the womb. You know, as we were born into this world, we were in this place of wholeness and love and peace. And then boom, you're birthed. And it has always interests me that as I work with women of all levels, everybody seems to have a story of not being good enough. And although I think that initial wound comes at birth, just like we all have a belly button. I had one very successful woman. I mean, she was a best-selling author, very dominant in a particular industry in sales. And she said, you know, Dawn, I knew that I was first unworthy when, or inadequate, she said, when at 5 years old, her parents decided to have another child. And sure, her interpretation of that was she wasn't enough.
Wow.
That she wasn't enough as an only child, so they had to have another one. And just right there starts that. In her mind, that was her first recollection of it. But I think inherently as part of our humanity, we all have this wound. And depending on what happens to you in your life, that belly button, if you will, can be large and sensitive or, you know, barely felt.
That's such an interesting way to look at it. And yes, the not enoughness is such a common theme. I have been talking to my oldest daughter a lot about how she's raising her children. She has three kids. And I think as a grandmother now, I can see a better way to raise children that I couldn't see when I was in the throes of it. And she's very open and she's a really good mom. And it's just to have that consciousness with how you choose to raise your children. And basically it's empathy first, like really understand that your kids have the right to have their feelings. And we were not raised to honor our feelings or even recognize them because they were too much. Don't cry, don't worry, don't do this, don't feel that. And once we can validate our feelings, then we can know who we are in the world. And like what you talked about before, the who were you at your core, it was covered up with, I have to prove, and I have to prove it in these ways. And you can't know who you are if you have never really stayed in touch or been able to be in touch with your core values, your core worth.
If you have ever played small to make other people feel comfortable, or maybe stayed in a bad relationship or job too long because you didn't think you could do any better, I wrote a book for you. It's called Becoming a Woman of Value, How to Thrive in Life and Love. Each of the 30 chapters contains a life lesson, a story, and an exercise to bring you closer to reaching your full potential. Becoming a Woman of Value is available on Amazon in paperback and Kindle.
When you strip all of the survival strategies and strategies to try to prove that you're better than you feel you are, you get down to the wound itself, which is hard. I mean, it's hard to sit with that. It's hard to sit with the inadequacy, but it's really the only way to eradicate it, because you've got to disprove it by going to it and saying, yeah, but how can this be true? And when you recognize that it's not true, and when you and I both have the good grace of having grandchildren, when you look at these little grandchildren in their faces and you know they are inherently worthy, that child doesn't have to do anything to prove its worth to us. They're just as precious as can be. Well, that's who we are too. But it really takes some rewiring and sometimes, you know, decades of experience in order to rewire back to that inherent sense of worth.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of the times when I'm working with a client who has some really big childhood wounds, we have them get a picture of themselves as a small child and just kind of reparent themselves, because you look at that helpless being who didn't choose this life, didn't choose these parents, didn't choose to believe the way they ended up believing. And we really have to work on our sense of self, because that's the thing that's getting in the way. It's not because you're not worthy. It's because of your belief.
Right. That's so true. And I think, you know, when we do this work, it's, you've got to hold people accountable for where they are, but only in your minds. You know, some people need to go out and have discussions, but for the most part, people, I think, avoid the work because they don't want to confront people. That's not necessary. I think what's important is in our minds, we straighten this out and say, that wasn't our fault. This wasn't our fault. We're all wounded people, and we were raised by wounded people. We have a wounded society. So there's no point in blaming anybody. The point is really to go back and restore who we are, because that's the best thing you can do for yourself, for your children, for your grandchildren in the world. It's engage in your own restoration process.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up the no blame piece of this, because I think a lot of people just get really angry and feel victimized by how they were brought up. And, you know, I really truly believe that it is, much as there are damaged people in the world, that they don't purposefully do the things they do. They're really just functioning at the best level they can. And often it's not good enough, but that doesn't mean that they were inherently bad people. They just didn't do the right thing for you. And you get to learn and break cycles of abuse and create a new legacy, which I think is super empowering. So I'm curious how you worked with a client. Take us through somebody who, like you just mentioned, had a sense of not enough. How would you go about helping that person?
Well, what keeps coming to mind as we're talking is I had a client, she's since left the business, but she was really very successful. So successful, she made Forbes 40 to watch under 40. I was so happy for her. I had gone in for our session shortly after the magazine was published, and I walked in and her head was down. There was flowers all over for the celebration of it. The magazine was there and she was noticeably distraught. And I closed the door and I sat down. I said, congratulations, this is fantastic. And she turns to me and she goes, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. She was so upset. She was literally in tears. And I said to her, I said, this is, most people would think this is the best thing that could happen. She goes, Dawn, you have no idea. She said, I turned 40 in 2 months. She said, I don't have the strength to do it all over again. I don't have the strength to be the 50 to watch under 50. And so for her, the striving, the accomplishment, and then she was aging out of it, made her feel like she was going back to ground zero and had to prove herself all over again. That is such a classic example of somebody that was working, you know, their identity was on the line, meaning their self-worth was something that was going to be judged by others, not themselves. And she had large public acknowledgement of her successes, yet internally, she was very wounded. So I would say, based on that story, the first thing is we have to uncouple several things, associations we make. The hardest life to live is when we are looking for others for approval instead of seeking that internally. When the outside world is gauging our self-worth or our value, that is a very turbulent, difficult path, because you will be acceptable to some, not acceptable to others. It doesn't make any difference. It's all based on their filters. It's not based on intrinsically who you are or what value you know you're expressing in the world. How people interpret that, what they can take out of it, those are all their issues. Our main concern as individuals is, what is my life expression, regardless of how people are receiving that, or if they're capable of receiving that. The first advice is just the awareness that you're doing it. And the awareness that we're doing anything is, you know, 50% of the battle, but it can never solve the issue. We can be aware that we're an alcoholic, but if we never stop drinking, it's not going to make a difference. So we can be aware that we are trying to prove our self-worth, or that I call it the performance track. We're on the performance track. We're trying to prove it. But then you've got to become aware of it and get off of it. You've got to stop. And for many people, it really is a time of separation from what it is that they so strongly identified with that was there to prove their worth. And sometimes, you know, if we're in jobs that we can't leave or don't want to leave, that's fine. We just make the mental detachment from it and say, okay, if this isn't who I am, who am I? And just the question, who am I, will start our own internal resources, because our own internal resources are always trying to lead us back to who we really are. There is those voices, that intuition. It is always trying to bring us back. We're the ones that deny it, dismiss it, don't listen, too busy, you know, trying, you know, looking for the gold over here, over there. We're the ones that shy away from it. But when we stop, we recognize that's how we are trying to prove ourselves isn't worthy. And then we turn inward and say, who am I? That will start a process. And then I would say after that, you've got to give yourself an avenue in which to communicate with yourselves. Most of us have terrible relationships with ourselves, and that gets played out in work, in our relationships, in our partners, you know, all kinds of things. When we turn back in and recognize, like, what kind of relationship am I really having with myself? Am I showing up? Am I attentive? Am I compassionate? Am I empathetic? All the things that you know we need to do to have a good relationship with a partner, we typically don't have that with ourselves. So, you know, next step after, you know, the awareness and getting off the track, I would say, is really start to shift. And if you're going to strive for anything, strive to have a better relationship with yourself.
Those are all such important steps. I think when you ask somebody, who am I? And or ask yourself, who am I? People really freak out from that question. They're like, I don't know who I am. And I have a client who has had a horrible, horrible abusive past. And with her, I had to go to more like, who are you not? It's what frustrates you, what angers you, to really get to her core values and what is most important to her. Because for a lot of people, they really have been so disconnected from who they are and what they need and want, because they're so other focused that they can't even go there. But I love all these steps. I think they're so important, and awareness, always key to just be aware, but it's not enough. Lori Gottlieb says awareness or insight is the booby prize of therapy. It's like, I can be so insightful, right? And do nothing.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. There has to be action there, because that's what changes our neurology. That's what changes our not only our neurology, but our physiology. you know, especially when you're talking about things that are ingrained in your body, it is in your body and yeah. it's present all the time. Doesn't matter if it happened 30, 40, 50 years ago, our body, as they say, and I love the book, Body Keeps the Score. Mm. We are, it's all living and breathing and the energy is there. You know, your whole life history. If you collapse the linear thought of time and you look at yourself as all of my experiences are active right now in my body, that's a great way to start going, okay, I need to start weeding some things out. I need to start, you know, taming some of these energies that are going on that are motivating me now because they worked 30 years ago, but they're not working now.
Yeah. And they still can come up. I just read a beautiful article by Gabor Mate. Do you know him?
No.
His work. So he does a lot of body work as well. And he's done a lot of work with addiction. And he talked about his upbringing where he was living in Poland or some part of Europe during World War II. And his family was Jewish, and his mother realized because he had such a sensitive constitution that he would not be able to do well in hiding, which is where the family went. So she sent him off with a non-Jewish family to basically raise him as a non-Jew until the war was over. And he felt betrayed when he was reunited with his mother. He wouldn't talk to her for like a week. And he was little, he was like maybe 4 years old. So that trigger of abandonment comes back all the time, but he can deal with it faster. And he talked about how he had just given a lecture. It was a really good lecture. He's on his way home. And his wife texts him, "Do you still need me to pick you up at the airport? I haven't left yet," or something. And he's like, "No, it's fine." And so he comes home. He doesn't talk to her for like a day and a half. And then his wife, who knows him very well, says, "Okay, cut it out. Enough already." So, you know, he, even though he does this work and he is so immersed in this and he's been doing trigger work for decades, he still goes back there. So I just wanted to put that message out to anybody listening who thinks it's kind of a one and done and you're healed. You can still be triggered, but you have tools to deal with it, and it's faster.
That's exactly right. And I'm so glad you're bringing up that point, because when I first went into therapy, I thought, you know, give me 6 sessions and I'm done with this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was 30 years ago, and I still get triggered. I can still get triggered. But the difference now is that I have more awareness of my inner landscape, and I've got resources I can pull in that when I do get triggered, I can recognize that it's a trigger. I can comfort myself and de-escalate much quicker. So now I don't act on those triggers. Mm-hmm. I might feel at any given time, oh, but I'm triggering that shame or that unworthiness again, but I can quickly come back and correct that perception and not act on it. And when we stop acting on the triggers, that's when we stop the patterns in our life.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about what's on tap for the future. You're doing all these great things now. You have this book and you're doing amazing coaching. What are your goals, dreams for the future?
I am speaking about the book, going out on podcasts, doing some things to just get this message out. Because at the end of the day, after my own healing went on, I became very aware through the messages that this process that I had gone through is starting to happen to everybody. You know, we are very much in the beginning of a new consciousness for humanity. And we see that right now. As women, most of us intuit it. It's anxiety provoking because new consciousness is expanding. You know, I mean, we are becoming more aware of who we are. We are becoming more aware of our interconnectedness. And that's just part of the human evolution, but it's very rapid. And anytime our minds expand in a rapid way, we're going to have turbulence. And that's what you're seeing in the world. And I think that's what we're feeling internally. So the more we can understand the process of expansion or awakening, the more we can work with it. And the more we work with it, the more gentle the process can be. So I'm really out helping my clients and talking to people about being aware of what's going on right now inside understanding that everybody's path to this new humanity that is emerging or arising is going to be as unique as their fingerprint. And the only way we take our path is to really come inward and connect with what resources that we know internally and let them lead us. Let that deepest truth inside of each of us and whatever you feel that's connected to, let that help you and lead you and heal you and guide you. And the more people that do that, the more we are going to return and restore as individuals. And the more individuals that can restore back to their inherent sense of value, the more our world will become restored. Mm-hmm. So that at the end of the day is the key message behind the book and what I will be doing, because I see a much more loving, much more compassionate future. I want that for my grandchildren. I want that for their children. But we've got to engage and do the work as individuals to make that happen for them.
I love that message, and I think it's just so crucial. So let's go into the lightning round. All right, you ready?
Love a good lightning round.
Okay, the first one is fill in the blank. I used to think I wasn't blank enough.
Smart enough.
What was the number one thing holding you back from becoming a woman of value?
Myself.
Quick, short answers. I love it. What is the best advice you can give to a woman who wants to become more empowered?
Trust yourself. You're stronger than you think.
What advice would you give to your younger self?
Don't worry so much. It's a good life.
What is something that people often get wrong about you?
That I don't need help.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. She's independent. She's got it down.
Yes, totally. She's totally doesn't need anything.
Right. Doesn't need anything.
No, mm-hmm. Which I think, you know, in that talk about the wounds, the people who are the most wounded don't ask for help. Right.
Exactly.
And then finally, Dawn, how would you like to be remembered?
A good mother, writer, and wife.
I love how you strip it down to what's really important. Dawn, this was such a great conversation. I love the work you're doing, and just the stripped down you is a beautiful you. Can you let our audience know how to find you? If you can give us one link, and the rest will be in the show notes.
On my website, which is dawnkohler.com, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram as well. Also on Amazon, the book is called The Messages, a memoir by Dawn Kohler, and you can go into Amazon and read a couple chapters. Hopefully you'll purchase the book, but either way, I'd love for you to read the book and write a review, and good, bad, or indifferent. Love to hear from you.
Thank you for sharing your story and for writing your story as well, so people can read it, and for inspiring our audience as a woman of value, Dawn.
Well, thank you, Sandy. I very much appreciate the time today, and this has been very enjoyable. So hope that our paths cross again.
Thank you so much. And if you enjoy listening, everybody, please give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. It helps us grow even larger and reach more people. And that's it for today. Have a really great day. We'll see you next time.
If you would like to step more fully into your value, grab a free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Becoming a Woman of Value on my website, thewomanofvalue.com. Just click the link at the top of the homepage. And if you haven't already done so, be sure to click the subscribe button in your listening app. And if there's something in this episode that inspired you, please share it with others, because the more we share these inspirational stories, the more women of value we will have in this world. I'll see you next time.